Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. We're delighted because today we have Scott Hebner, VP of Social Business at IBM, who's joining us again. You may remember that Scott was on the podcast for episode number 6, Rallying the Troops Around Transformational Force. And today, we just had so much going on in that last podcast that we didn't get around to something that I really wanted to talk with Scott about, and that is the 6 trends to watch in social business in 2014. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Great to be back.
Yeah. I had a great time on the podcast with you last time, and I figured it would be a crime not to have you come back and talk about some of these trends that you're predicting. To remind everyone that was on the last podcast and those just joining us for this one, Scott had sent over 6 trends to watch for in 2014, and I've read through them. I'm going to be composing a blog post inspired by these ideas, but I think because Scott, you're the one that came up with these ideas and sent them over, I really just have to talk to you about them. But before we get into the 6 trends, I want to set the stage. I want you to kind of set some context. And, you and I are both in the social business industry, and I don't know about you, but I'm often having to distinguish for people the difference between social media and social business. And even though social business encompasses and actually has social media as part of it and the concepts of social at the core of it, they are very different things. I was wondering if you could just give us kind of a brief overview from, the role that you're in, the work that you do. How do you explain the difference between social business and social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right on the head social media, I think, is really just the tip of the iceberg. It's just the beginning of the power that we're going to start to see happen here as people are able to, connect with each other, share knowledge, build relationships, tap into each other's expertise, learn quicker, and so on and so forth. And when we think of social business, we're thinking of social sort of in the definition that comes in the dictionary. Basically, behaviors that take into account the interests, the intentions, and the needs of interdependent people. And you add that to the definition of a business, sort of, a task or a mission aligned to a commercial outcome, which usually obviously involves, buying or selling something of value. You put those two words together, and it's really, in our view, a fundamental shift in how businesses will operate at their most foundational layers. And this is all being enabled by a rather profound amplification of the human condition, right? Our ability to engage with each other, share knowledge, build relationships, follow what others do, learn from each other, tap into that collective knowledge. And you kind of think about it, 5 years ago, we weren't really able to do that all that effectively. Of course, throughout history, throughout time, we've always done all those things, but now you can do it on a scale that's just absolutely incredible. And more importantly, I think, is that as this occurs, as all these conversations and knowledge sharing and relationships and all this happens, it's being sort of recorded, if you will. We're creating digital footprints that creates a whole new level, a human face, if you will, to data that people can make much better decisions. They can predict future events. So in many ways, we view it as this fundamental shift in how work is done, right, how businesses operate, and how consumers are going to behave, and therefore how businesses have to engage with those consumers. And what we're seeing with the social media, there's some 2 billion social connections in the world, 5 billion expressions every day across the world with all these social networks. That's just the beginning of what's going to happen here. And when businesses start to really figure out how to leverage it, it becomes quite powerful. And we're pretty strong in our opinion here that all businesses are becoming social businesses, whether they realize it or not. What it really comes down to now is how are you going to harness that to create competitive advantage?
I absolutely love that you said that, because as you were talking about this, I immediately thought about the fact that in our last conversation, you said that exact same thing, that all businesses will become social businesses. It's just whether or not they realize it and how effectively that they'll do it. And since our conversation, that really struck a chord with me in a lot of my conversations. I've been much more forthright in saying that because I really believe that you're right there. Whether or not you choose to participate as a business is truly irrelevant as to whether or not social will have an impact on your business. You don't have to participate for it to have some sort of an impact. So I think you're dead on. I mean, obviously, you spend a lot of time in this, and I think for that reason, I really want to jump into your six trends to watch for because I'm as a social business enthusiast myself, I have to say I hope that you're right with these predictions. So I want to just start off, and I'm going to go through. I'd like to actually just kind of read off the six, and then I want to dive into them. If that's a good way of going about it, in your opinion, that's how I'm going to go do it. Cool?
Sounds good.
Okay, good. So here's right the six. On. Everybody pay attention. Here's the six. Social businesses are not just about collaboration, but instead they are also about creating learning organizations and that differentiated expertise and collective knowledge can emerge. That's one of them. The second one is that social businesses in 2014 will begin to tap into this behavioral data, and that will help them drive their decision-making. They will look at the behaviors of their audience and their employees and their stakeholders, and they will use those to actually drive business decisions. The third one, and I really can't wait to get into this one, but you talk about the rise of the individual and that there's going to be this thing called marketing as a service, and I'm really excited for us to talk about that one. The fourth one is that social is going to take on talent management, and I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about how talent management is going to be impacted by social. The fifth one is that businesses are going to be paying a lot more attention to their customers and letting that drive their innovation. Or to frame it a different way, the customer-activated social enterprise will drive the innovations. And then the final one, you predict that the true convergence of social, mobile, analytics, and the cloud is upon us. I would love to believe it as an early adopter, but I'm curious to see what you say. So let's start right at the top. And why don't you tell me a little bit about this shift where social businesses will not just be about collaboration, but will also unlock collective knowledge, differentiate expertise, rapid learning. And what I want to ask you about before you answer that is I've seen so much trouble in organizations even embracing this idea of collaboration. Do you think that unlocking the collective knowledge and expertise is actually a better selling point to get them involved in this idea of opening up the organization?
Actually, I do. Collaboration. You know, actually, we had a meeting with a CEO of a big engineering and construction company, Floor is actually their name, and he made the point that collaboration is just really the first step because it's not just about everyone getting along and talking with each other. It's about the outcome for the customer. And the outcome for the customer is really how you take your knowledge as a business, the collective knowledge that you have across your various organizations, your various people, and you fuse it with the knowledge of your business partners, and you fuse it with the knowledge of your customer, and you bring it all together, and from there, drive the outcomes. And in their business, whether it's constructing, everything from the design to the actual production of building a bridge, for example, that industry is evolving from a very engineering design-oriented approach that is historically focused around a small number of experts, right, to an industry now that is so fluid and involves such a broader array of technologies and platforms, and I'm not just talking about software platforms, I'm talking all different kinds of platforms when it comes to technology, that it's becoming a data-oriented business, not an engineering business, but a data-oriented. And when they say data, they mean behavioral data. They mean knowledge, right? And the ability to get project teams to tap into each other's knowledge and learn from past experiences, past mistakes, past successes, and to do it across, organizations that have traditionally been very siloed, working on their little project or this other project and not sharing all the knowledge that they have to bring an outcome. You go back many years ago and you think about how organizations traditionally operated. Most are very hierarchical. They are project or task or organized, and they would execute projects based on tasks, not around a collective outcome. And to achieve collective outcomes, you need collective knowledge in order to be successful, right? And that's how you differentiate the expertise of an organization. You know, the old saying is that it's not what you know, it's what you share and how you apply and how you learn from others. And so with 2 billion social connections out there and 5 billion expressions every day, and that's just out in the marketplace, some 25% of the population in the world are connected through social networks. But if you look at actual employees, it's around 70%. And if you look at knowledge-based industries, it's closer to 80 or 90%. And this is really unlocking a whole new opportunity to really sharpen the expertise through collective knowledge. And that's what many businesses are looking to do to differentiate their offerings, right? Customers are valuing the outcome. They're valuing the experience of dealing with the company more than the actual product itself now.
That's I'm totally on board with you. Let me push back on you though, because I'm going to play the devil's advocate of the company that would say, the skeptic. So we've got, you know, tons of industries that are reliant upon their proprietary technology or their competitive advantage. And I personally believe that the company that opens up and embraces their customers, embraces their collective knowledge of their employees, is going to be faster and better suited. But to the company that holds true that they have some sort of a competitive advantage in their siloed structures or in keeping their hierarchy in a certain way, what do you say to companies like that that would push back and fight against this idea of collaboration or the learning organization?
Well, I think, you know, I think in the past you were pretty much forced to work in that sort of a model. But I think there'd be very few that would argue that there's any individual anywhere in the world that knows everything and that has had all the various degrees of challenges and successes and failures.
But you're on the phone with them right now. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Right. And you know, I mean, all of us kind of experienced this, right? And you know, take an organization that may have different parts of it that deal with different parts of a customer. Right. If I go back to the engineering, you know, there may be someone that's dealing, you know, if you're working with a government, you may be working with their infrastructure, roads and, you know, highways group. And there might be someone else who's working, you know, as part of the environmental group. And, you know, but it's just one customer, yet you silo it. And so this idea of 1 + 1 = 3 really comes into play here. And, you know, most leaders would tell you that when mistakes are made or when outcomes don't materialize as they would predict, it usually goes back to something that could have been predicted. Mm-hmm. Some sort of decision that, you know, would could be predicted would not lead to the right outcome. Yet the people that were making those decisions did not have the experience, knowledge, or you know, ability to tap into other people that perhaps have gone through that before. So any way you can facilitate 1 + 1 = 3, you're going to have a much stronger outcome. And you can't do that unless you create a more flattened out organization that's socially collaborating around shared knowledge and changing the fundamental way they work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about connecting people to collaborate and to communicate and to send emails and to do chats with each other. It's about the knowledge, and it's about tapping into it and facilitating the ability to get to it in a timely manner around their specific task in hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's you know, you're referring to a lot of things that are very data driven, and I absolutely love that. And I want to let that segue us into your next prediction, where you talk about social businesses being able to tap behavioral data and use that to drive their business decisions. And where I want to ask you about that is, one, how are businesses small to large tapping this behavioral data? Where are they seeing it? Where are they getting it? How are they measuring it? And how are they going to be able to use that to drive business decisions and really get the business outcomes that they're looking for? Are small businesses, you know, strategically minded enough or capable enough to understand how to do this?
Well, I think there'll be very few business leaders that would not strongly say that their businesses are becoming more and more data-oriented businesses, and the ability to tap into data in this absolute explosion of it that's occurring out there today because of all this digital infrastructure, right, is just absolutely enormous. And those that are able to tap into it and be able to do the analytics against it, are they going to be those that can make the right decisions, are going to be able to predict future outcomes, and therefore adapt? What's interesting about this this evolution that we've been on around data is clearly it started with all the empirical data, right? Transactions, customer records, service calls, right? Customer, you know, satisfaction surveys, right? And that's good and important. That then evolved over the last many years to a big focus on instrumented data, right? It could be the sensors on a bridge. It could be the sensors on electricity grid on your house, on how much electricity you're using, at what time of the day. It could be all of us, for the most part, are instrumented, and we walk around with our smartphones that know our location and are able to, you know, you're able to walk in a store now, and it knows you're there, and it gives you, you know, you're walking by something, and it will tell you that you can get 25% off if you buy it. So instrumented data has been a big focus in this industry for many, many years now, kind of building on empirical. Now there's a new phase of data that's being produced at an incredible rate, and that's the human face to data. It's the behavioral, the sentimental type data that simply did not exist 5 years ago. And if you think about it, every time we have one of these social conversations, and you're tapping into knowledge and you're sharing knowledge and you're sharing materials and blogs and all that kind of stuff, you're creating digital footprints, and it's all out there in the open. And therefore, the views, the activities, the performance, the desires, right, the intentions of people are now out in the open, right? And that's creating a new set of data, what we call human data or behavioral data, that I think businesses are just now starting to get their heads around and beginning to say, how can I tap into that so that I can learn more about the people I'm dealing with and therefore serve them better? And I can predict trends in the marketplace, and I can understand sentiment, and I can understand potential, you know, unhappiness, if you will, that a customer base may have, and actually take a preemptive action to resolve it.
So, are you suggesting
that kind of data didn't exist 5 years ago?
Are you suggesting then that that companies in, you know, because these are predictions, are you suggesting then that companies moving forward in 2014 will more widely adopt social listening technology, social CRM, social scoring and reviews and ratings, customer service applications and things like that, and begin to quantify what's working and what's not working so that they can make better decisions?
Absolutely. And I think there's many different angles to this, right? And you mentioned several of them. And we'll get into the marketing here in a second. Obviously, you can learn more about your customers and therefore market to them more effectively. You can do analysis internally on your workforce and understand the sentiment and the behavioral characteristics of how a workforce works. You can look at it from a service perspective, right? And you can even look at it from, you know, an underlying competitive, you know, performance-based, right? And, you know, many of us kind of experience this if you use like Nike Plus, for example, and you're an athlete or you try to stay in shape and, you know, you set up contests with other in real time, you're sort of seeing how each other's doing, right? And you're, you know, having fun with each other through the social networks and all that. All that's producing the data, and you can do some real behavioral science on that data and those behavioral trends and sentiment to better understand what you need to do to be successful. And again, that's everything from hiring to marketing to how you provide better service, how you provide better loyalty programs, and how you really understand how people are using your products, how people are talking about them. You know, you can do personality profiles. You know, we have a project in IBM going on right now where, you know, it can take 100 tweets from somebody and provide a 40-point personality profile on that person, because, you know, behavioral scientists have identified, you know, the way you use language and the way you phrase things and the different words you use leads to different personality traits. Are you introvert? Are you quick to make decisions? Do you delay forever? You know, are you generally an unhappy person? Are you thrilled to get involved with other people? You know, all those kind of personality traits you can predict ahead of time by just analyzing the social data, and therefore you can deal with that person more effectively.
Okay, so you're clearly going to have to let me in on that because I'm so very interested to see what would be said about me. I'm so curious.
And you know, something maybe we can do that in the future is I can get you involved in that. We can go take some of your tweets and we can do a little personality.
I would love to.
In fact, let's do that just for fun as a follow up to this.
But I love
the idea. Let me give you a real example. AMC Theaters is a great example of this. And they worked with IBM on our Kinexa portfolio, which is talent management, mm-hmm. Human capital management software, which is really big on the behavioral sciences in the behavioral analytics. And they have some billion points of data that they've collected over the years, and they can help customers do behavioral analytics on the type of employees and skills. And it's not just about getting the right, it's not just about getting good talent, it's about getting the best fit talent. And the way they make money at these movie theaters is not from selling tickets to the movies, it's actually from the concession stands. Popcorn, soda, all that stuff. And actually the people that behind the concession that sell the most are those that have very specific personality traits. And so when they do their hiring now, that is what they're looking to identify. And, they have some real hardcore business outcomes from that. Like, the top performing theaters are, I think, something like 300,000 more in revenue or net income, I think it was, based on the concessions sales, because they were able to significantly improve the talent. And again, not just having talent, but having the best fit. And that's an example of using social analytics and behavioral sciences targeted at how you hire, how you recruit and hire talent. And that's just one of many angles.
That's absolutely fascinating. And it's so funny because as I'm listening to you talk about these things, I'm hearing all the different points you're making. I'm seeing that there, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but I'm assuming you did. Of your six trends, they all seem to actually fit together quite nicely. I mean, we talk about the rise of the individual marketing as a service, and then we bring in behavioral data, and that taps into the talent management. It looks like if we kind of overlay these all together, we're seeing that social is a way for us to make better decisions based upon individuals and tools. So with that, I want you to talk to me a little bit about the rise of the individual and this, quote, marketing as a service, as you describe it. When I think of rise of the individual, I'm thinking about when organizations put their people front and center, instead of worrying about their corporate logo and the voice of their brand, they let their people be the voice of the brand. But I think you're actually talking about it from that perspective, but you're also bringing in that customers as individuals, when you look at them behaviorally or whatever, you can begin to identify things by looking at individuals that represent something to your business. Can you just talk a little bit about this rise of the individual? And then I'm really curious about your marketing as a service concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, there's some very clear before and after, cause and effect kind of trends that have been well quantified in the industry. One being an external one, which is the more you're able to deal with a customer or a prospect on a more personalized, individualized basis, the much stronger the outcomes are, right? At the same time, for an employee perspective, the higher the level of engagement, right, there's a significant higher degree of productivity and output from that level of engagement. And engagement is often, getting an employee to be highly engaged is when they feel they're being, they're special, right? They're being treated in a unique way, and that they're valued and understood within the organization. So, what all this social data that's getting produced out there now is allowing companies to do is focus on the individual, right? Not market. Let's talk about marketing. Not to market to segments. And historically, businesses would create a brand image that they would market to everyone through, right? As you mentioned, right? This is what the brand is all about, mm-hmm. through TV, and advertising and newspapers and broad-based promotions and mailers and, things of that nature. But now what you can do is, not rather than just targeting segments of people, you're able to take that to the next level and understand very specific desires, needs, behaviors, and activities of an individual, because you're able to tap into more of that social data around that individual. You can't treat someone as an individual if you don't know anything about them. You're not going to know anything about them unless you're able to use this data, right, that's available to learn more about what that person's trying to accomplish and what they're, what they're thinking, mm-hmm. right? And the more you can do that, the more you can treat them as an individual.
And it's very hard to treat someone as an individual when you're treating them as sort of a theme or a profile that you're building that kind of lumps people into these general things. and you can't build that profile unless you understand the aggregate of all of your individuals.
Right. So, I mean, there's one, you know, one example. This would be XO Communications. They're one of our customers, and they've, you know, through some of the conversations that occur out in the digital, you know, ecosystem, they're able to spot customers that perhaps are frustrated with what's going on with their with their coverage, right, their cell coverage and all that. And they know that there's a high propensity for those people to jump ship and go to another provider. They're now able to identify them ahead of time and go, you know, engage with them around their specific issue before it happens, not after, which is traditionally what they would do. You know, another example, and this is where we get into marketing as a service. I think we all, you know, historically think of marketing as not necessarily a service. I can't wait to get my next marketing thing, right? You know, you get your mailers in the paper, you see a TV commercial or whatever you're sending, or you get your coupon. You know, you don't necessarily think that they're providing me a service.
I think people think of marketing as advertising more than anything, and that's so frustrating. I mean, that typically is what I wind up hearing people talk about marketing as, is advertising. And I just think it's become so much bigger. You know, to your point, it's not just like when's the next mailer or TV campaign.
Right. So let me state it a different way. When you start to think of marketing from a particular company as a service to you, that's when you know they're doing good marketing. And what's going to drive you to consider it to be a service? Well, it's going to start to become a service when it starts to be of value to you and help you make decisions, help you do things. So, you know, an example, let me just give you a more personalized example of this, is that, you know, one of the things I do, unfortunately, in my spare time is I have a reef aquarium, which, by the way, if you ever want to have a money pit where you can throw a lot of money away, go get a reef aquarium.
Oh, I've been looking for one of those. I'm sorry. I'm looking for a money bowl where money just falls into it.
Yeah, this is not it. This is where you put things in for a lot of money and then watch them die, unless you really know what you're doing. So it's a huge, I mean, because when you're doing it with a reef aquarium, it's the chemistry of everything needs to be perfect, and there's just a lot to it. So it's a live, learn, get frustrated, and then try again kind of experience. And one thing I've noticed over the years is that, you know, there's several, you know, coral and fish stores around that you can go to, but usually you would walk in there and you would look around, you would buy something, you would talk to someone, and you would leave. What a couple of these guys are starting to do now is actually turn it in. They've actually created like an online. What they're doing is they're feeding knowledge to me, right, about different. And they know, this one store knows what I've bought there before. So they know what kind of corals, they know what kind of anemones, what kind of fish, and basically what my general setup is. Then as things become available, they're sending me tips and techniques and stories about what other people are doing and things I may be interested in. And so I actually look forward to getting their little newsletter, which I swear there's some degree of personalization to it, because it knows too much about what, I mean, there's a lot of variety in what you can do with these things, right? But it happens to send me things that are very relevant to me, because somehow they must be using my purchase behavior, right? So that's the beginning, I think, of marketing as a service. Now, imagine if they had created, maybe the next step is a collaborative community where all their customers for this particular store can get together and they can share their experiences and talk and collaborate and kind of create an online, you know, collaborative community around, you know, around reefing, right, as a hobby. And then from there, you can imagine them then, you know, whatever I post out there, whatever conversations I have, they can learn from it, and then they can further personalize how they send me special offers and the tips and techniques. And I start to think of this as, man, they're providing me a service. They're helping me be more successful. They're sending me stuff I need. And as a byproduct, I'm more likely to go back to them and buy.
What's awesome about this,
regardless of the price.
What's awesome about this is that it's so cool. We had Jay Baer on the podcast. I believe it was like episode number 5 or something like that, or 4 or something. And he had written a book called Utility, which the kind of the tagline of it is marketing so useful you'd pay for it. And you're alluding to almost the exact same idea, which is that the marketing of today's day and age isn't so much something that happens at you, but something that happens for you. It's something that provides you with some sort of value or utility so that you actually look forward to getting it, and it improves your life, and thereby you build relationship and trust with that company or that organization or that individual. So I love that what you're saying is that the next phase of social business, which, you know, Jay's talking about often in the social media marketing context, there's a real parallel there. And I fully agree with you. I often encourage my clients to think from the perspective of what is going to be valuable to your clients. So I love that that's a prediction you're making. And I hope that both you, Jay, and myself are right, that this is a trend that will continue.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing I would love to see them do, and if I was consulting with them, and it's pretty easy to do if you create these online communities, you know, even if you use Twitter, right? Or, but, you know, ideally you can build your own customized one with things like IBM Connections, and, you know, they don't always have to be the public. You can make it a little bit more private. But one thing Reef people always run into is because of the chemistry is so delicate that they have these things called like nuking your tank, where you start getting ammonia spikes and then things start dying, then it gets worse, and before you know it, the whole thing gets wiped out. And that's happened to me so many times over the last 5 or 6 years. Wouldn't it have been great if I was able to tap into that community and it had an expertise locator, right, where people that have had those conversations and been and out there, you know, it would automatically come up and send me a notification that this person has gone through the exact kind of thing with the same kind of setup. You know, you should contact them to see, you know how you can get out of this thing without losing a lot of money, kind of thing, right? I mean, the potential is really incredible because it's taken empirical data like what I've bought. It's taken instrumented data like perhaps where I live or I'm driving by the store and it might pop up on my phone saying, hey, you know, stop by, we'll give you 25% off for whatever food because we know you have whatever. And then you take all the knowledge that could be mined among their customer base if they can create a community and be able to do some, you know, analytics on that to understand my sentiment, behaviors, what I like to do, what I'm having problems with, and then proactively market to me. That's when you start to feel like I would start to feel that the marketing is actually a service when, you know, their end game is for me to go in there and buy more. It just doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
It's not an overt. And that's what I mean by marketing as a service. And, you know, again, I'd go back to 5 years ago. That's much harder to do in a effective way because it was much harder to understand individuals versus segments. And with this social data and all the digital stuff that's out there now, it's that much easier to do. And I think a lot of businesses are starting to actually do exactly that.
Awesome. I mean, I'm with you 100% on it. I think that's, you know, the question that usually comes up when I talk about all this personalization and service and, you know, you need to understand your customer. So obviously you need a lot more data about them to be able to provide that level of personalization and service. Often people come back with the, well, isn't that getting kind of creepy? And I think the where the line typically gets drawn is, you know, if it's truly valuable to you, I think a lot of people are willing to compromise a little bit more if it's something that's truly valuable. And that they have trust with that organization that's going to those lengths to provide something of value.
Yeah. I mean, think of what is the least innovative organization that you can think of?
I would say maybe Microsoft.
Oh, go for it.
Maybe Microsoft.
No,
I'm just kidding.
How about the U.S.? How about the government?
Could be.
Let me just give you an example. And so this is an example of the U.S. government, the National Library of Medicine. This is a true story. They provide materials, right, on different diseases and sicknesses and all that, treatments and so forth. And you can go out to their website and you can download all this material if you want to study up on something like, I don't know, Lyme disease. But all they really get from that is how many downloads and perhaps where the person geographic region is and things like that. But you know, it's useful. What they've started to do is they've started to do social analytics on the social conversations that occur around the downloads. So now they can understand where else is this person looking for information? What's the unique characteristics? Are they doing it for a friend? Are they doing it for themselves? Are they, you know, what stage are they at in the sickness, and they're able to learn more about them and therefore make the content they provide to that person more valuable. Because when you go and download something, you know, a document on Lyme disease, it doesn't really tell them anything except that you're interested in Lyme disease. But if they knew more about where you lived, because there's different, I guess ticks have different diseases in different parts of the country and how long you can learn so much more from all this data. It's all out there because people have these conversations.
Yep.
You know, if you have a Twitter ID associated to whatever you're doing and people are tapping into it and using the hashtags, the data is there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And therefore, you can learn and therefore, again, they can market to people in a much more knowledgeable way around what the individual's trying to do, Right. And that's not magic, right? I mean, this is going to be an evolution over many, many years to really tune this. But you have the opportunity to go from a broad-based segment, right, where people of your company are engaging with people that are their customers and potential customers in an increasingly more individualized way and therefore be more personable.
Tell me, let's go to your fourth one, because I think that there's kind of a natural segue into talent management. And I want you to tell me a little bit about, you know, because some of the things we've been talking about are more about relying on external individuals, so the people that are outside of the organization. I mean, the first one was more about your internal, individuals, your employees and your stakeholders and people that have knowledge inside the organization, and to a certain extent, your customers on the outside. When we look at talent management, it's kind of this funny bridge between the two, because you're trying to take people from outside your organization and bring them in, and at the same time, once you have them in there, how do you manage them? How do you deal with them? How do you keep them engaged? How do you keep them learning? How do you keep them feeling acknowledged and appreciated? And you have this this prediction that social is going to be increasingly important in talent management. Tell us, you know, tell everybody why you think that's going to be the case in 2014. What makes you think that this will actually happen in 2014?
Yeah, I mean, I think our senior leaders here at IBM, when they think social business, what they're really talking about is the human element of business and how the human element is changing. Obviously, you got cloud and mobile and big data, some other big technology trends. Social is really the human element, right? And so when you start thinking about your employees, who in most cases are humans, and, you know, there's dogs and stuff that some people employ, but in general, they're human beings. And therefore, how you go about recruiting, as I said before, not good talent, but the best fit talent for what you need. How do you onboard them effectively and efficiently? How do you motivate them? And then how do you retain them? And we're in an era of what we kind of term the independent worker. And people are moving from job to job, to company to company, so much more fluently than they have in the past, particularly the millennial generation that by the end of this year will be about 47% of the workforce who are inherently social, right, in both the tools and the way they run their lives and all that, to their ability and desire to move around a bunch of different companies. So retaining people is very difficult. So on the front end, you want to recruit the right people, best fit talent, right? How do you do the analytics? How do you leverage social, technologies to better understand, you know, a resume will only tell you so much about personality and about how a person behaves and their sentiment and all that. So you can leverage it to create better profiles of who you're trying to hire. As you get them on board, one of the things that IBM has done is we have a social onboarding process now. And in fact, we have a new employee that we just hired, just came on board just a few days ago, at the beginning of this year. But she's been engaged with IBM and all her colleagues for over 2 months now, because the social onboarding community that we provided her access to allowed her to start to network and understand what's happening within IBM and to therefore significantly improve the onboarding process, learning up to 20 to 25% quicker than just showing up on day one and being thrown into the middle of everything. Because she already knows contacts, she knows what, you know, who the people are, and people have reached out to her to help her and all that.
I mean,
right?
It also seems like a more natural way to learn. I mean, you know, the kind of sit there and listen to the lecture or whatever, it doesn't seem how people learn in real life. If you think about, you know, the progress of how children learn, they're surrounded by people and they take their cues from social signals about what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. They learn language through the way that people – it just makes sense that we would move into more of a situation or a system like that where you would use, you know, more social tools to onboard people and to get them acclimated.
Yeah, I mean, I would ask the question of everyone that's, you know, listening, and you too, Jeff, I mean, I can speak for myself, is that when I got hired into IBM, one is I didn't really talk to any IBMer except the HR person and the manager who hired me, on the day I showed up. And two is I certainly didn't have any interaction with other new employees that were coming on board. So the ability to create these so-called social onboarding communities, where I can now interact with not only other IBMers beyond just my new manager, but, you know, and start to get engaged earlier, but also I can engage and network with other new people coming on board, just significantly accelerates the onboarding process. Of course, the other side of the coin is usually when you come in to take a job, in a majority of the time, you're taking a job that someone else has previously had, right? And that onboarding process of getting up to speed on what your job is and sort of the best practices of what that your predecessor had done or did not do well, either or, well, the social capabilities now allow you to, you know, as we were saying before, share the collective knowledge so you can pick up much easier from where the previous person was by tapping into all the knowledge that they have created, you know, all the social content, if you will, that was created, because it doesn't go away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's
and then of course you get to the retaining of customer or employees. That's even I saw a stat somewhere, some survey that is a 30% premium when you lose an employee, when they quit. And therefore, I mean, if someone was to quit because they didn't feel motivated or they weren't engaged or whatever, it costs you 30% more to actually get that person replaced. So therefore, it's very important if you spend all this money getting someone on board, you train them, you get them, you know, up to speed, and if they're a good employee, you want to retain them. And that brings you full circle to what we were saying on the marketing side, is that the more you can know about your employees and treat them as individuals and not departments or groups or divisions, but actually as individuals, the more you're going to motivate them. Right. And therefore, they're going to be happier, they're going to be, and they're going to be engaged with their other peers, and they're going to be thinking to themselves and participating in the greater good of the company, not just their little task.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings you to the collaboration piece, right?
Yeah. And what I was going to say is that you had mentioned the millennials and the impact they're having on the workforce. And I think it can't be understated that it's not just the technology, but the changing workforce and what their social norms are. That if you look at, you know, the things you've been saying, you know, the rise of the individual inside of the organization, they have certain expectations. Outside of the organizations, they have certain expectations. And if we take those two things and we look at some of the predictions you're making via technology and behaviors that companies can take on, it sounds like a win-win-win, because when you retain your talent, that's good for the business, and it also, if you're retaining them, they're likely more happy in their role. If you retain your customer, that's better for the business, because as we all know, it costs more to go get a new client than to retain one. So again, the business wins and the customer wins because they're sticking around, they must be happier. So we're looking at these win-win-win situations. And then if we take it one step further and we look at your next prediction where you're saying the customer-activated social business, the one that pays more attention to their customers, are actually going to be more innovative. Now we're looking at the customers actually giving back to the company itself and helping to drive better products and better decisions. It's going to save the company's money. It's going to make the customers happier because they're getting exactly what it is that they wanted through their contributions. And you know, what talk a little bit about this – you know, businesses paying more attention to their customers and the impact that that'll have. I mean, obviously, aside from the things that I had just said, the impact that it's going to have when we start seeing businesses that are paying more attention to their customers and using that information to drive new decisions.
Yeah, and this one is really about the transparency of organizations and transparency of businesses and governments. And therefore, the more transparent you are, the more authentic you need to be. And if you kind of think about any business, whether, you know, again, this goes back to what we were saying earlier on, is that whether you realize it or not, you're becoming transparent. And you're becoming transparent because you're becoming social. And you're becoming social because 70 or 80% of your employees are using social technologies in the marketplace, whether you realize it or not. And therefore, where it used to be maybe 20% of your organization would be engaged out in the marketplace, you know, your sales team, maybe some of your marketing services people, today, almost everyone is. Everyone's on the front lines with your customers now, and they are engaged in the marketplace. And therefore, your organization is becoming more transparent, and customers and employees are engaging at a much greater degree of depth and at a greater velocity. Another way of looking at that is I think the smarter enterprises are saying that with this new capability, right, the digital ecosystem, if you will, there's new opportunities to completely open up our enterprise and bring the customers in as part of our decision-making, as part of our prioritization. And that's why you see some 50% plus of businesses today are doing some degree of crowdsourcing, right, or crowdfunding as a way to sift ideas, to get their customers involved, to tap into collective knowledge, to really get things right. And they're developing their products and services out in the open now. PepsiCo, you know, went out and they brought all their customers in that wanted to actually help design the new marketing advertise or campaign, for example. And IBM did it with our Rational business in terms of the Jazz technology, and we built that in the open through a crowdsource kind of effort. And you know, our CEO surveys show that 90% of CEOs around the globe, there was 4,000 of them that were interviewed, 90% of them plan over the next 3 years to more open up their enterprise to their customers and to bring them in as part of how the organization operates. And, you know, we know that some 70% of them, you know, recognize the importance of shifting to new models of social and digital interaction for these customers and to define new markets. So, again, with the proliferation of all the social content and the social web, you're able to do that in a degree that you couldn't really have done it too well in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That you apply the analytics to it to learn and to prioritize, you know, the ideas and the knowledge that's out there based on the parameters that you want to set, right? And then, of course, you have the invariable here, which is, and it's happening whether you realize it or not, because your employees are engaged. And that's where the importance of policy and governance and security also comes in, too. But that's what we mean by customer-activated enterprise, is that by definition, the more your customer and the more the marketplace is engaged through tapping into their collective knowledge, their collective ideas, their collective behaviors and wants and desires, by definition, you're really going to drive innovation that truly matters. Rather than innovating, having a small group of people around a table innovate some product and then ship it in beta form or just ship it in general and then find out whether that's really what people wanted, right?
Mm-hmm. And I would also I would suggest, and I would add, and you may or may not agree with this, but I think not only is it a good idea, a smart idea, and the you know, case studies and examples you've mentioned and I'm sure you have access to would show, not only is it a smart idea, but I think there's almost a necessity or an inevitability that if you as a business don't do that, if you don't look to embrace the crowd, you don't look to embrace your customers, there's going to be a competitor that's going to come around and do it, or there's going to be a brand new scrappy upstart that's going to base an entire business around that. And when we look at the things that you know, some of the people that are out there talking about the sharing economy and the collaborative economy and things like that, there's a lot to suggest that this shift is coming where we're no longer just going to be sharing media and ideas, but also things and services, and to not delve into this and look for the opportunity for your business is pretty much missing a giant opportunity that if you don't get on board could very likely put you under.
Yeah, and you know, there's so, again, you know, with all of these, there's so many different angles you can take from a business perspective. Again, I think that brings us full circle to this really being about the human element, and therefore it is really about the underpinnings of how a business really operates, the design philosophy, if you will, on how to work differently. And, you know, one thing we know from CEOs is only about 20%, actually 18% is the number that we had in one survey, are really satisfied with the level of innovation that their businesses bring into the marketplace. And at the same time, they feel that only 13% of them feel that they're able to tap into the collective knowledge of not only their organizations, but of the marketplace as they do their innovation. And I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing this major trend behind crowdsourcing. And crowdsourcing is an element of a social business. And, you know, one that comes to mind, you know, another personal example here is, you know, I got a few sons, and two of them went off this future video game that's coming out called Star Citizen. And they went out and spent $60 each to buy a spaceship for this new video game. And I wanted to take a look at it. And I said, well, this doesn't ship until the end of 2015. I'm like, are you crazy? You guys spent $120? I mean, this is an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old, right? You know, you spent $120 on this? He goes, yeah, you know, you get access to the community and you get some of the early prototypes and all that. And so I went out and checked this thing out, and it's a true crowdsourced effort. It's called Star Citizen. And last I saw, there were 270,000 other people that did the same thing, and they've raised over $35 million of funding.
That's insane.
Now, and that brings me full circle to what these CEOs are saying is when you ask them what is the most difficult part about achieving innovation, they'll say two things. One is the right knowledge, collective knowledge, if you will. And the second thing is freeing up funding to really try new innovative things, right? Mm-hmm. And in many ways, a social business, you know, applying crowdsourcing in an organized, process-structured way can achieve both those. You can tap into collective ideas and knowledge of a broad-based number of people, right, largely your customers or prospects. And two is you can actually use it to fund rather than going to venture capitalists or try to fund out of your operating budget.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, you know, what I've learned about this whole space, if you think about it as being more than just social media and you start thinking about it as I was saying before, right, social in terms of how the dictionary defines it and the human element of how consumers buy and how employees work, it really is transformational.
Yeah.
And you know, that's when you infuse that with some of these new highly innovative technologies around cloud and mobile and you know, big data analytics, and then you really start to be able to move your business in a very effective way forward.
Well, let's talk about that with the analytics, because the final prediction you made was that social, mobile, analytics, and the cloud will finally converge as we had been. I guess past predictions have thought that at some point it would happen, and you think in 2014 it's going to happen. I'm personally a little skeptical of it, but you think that this is the year that we're going to see more of a convergence between the social, the mobile, the analytics, and the cloud. Tell me why you think this is the year that social, mobile, analytics, and the cloud become converged.
Yeah, you know you're starting to get there when you're starting to see terms for it like SMAC. SMAC, right?
I've never heard of that.
Social, mobile, analytics, and cloud, right? Hashtag SMAC. if you kind of think about, they have sort of developed as sort of independent in many ways technology trends, but they're very, very rapidly fusing together, and it's very rare that we get involved with a customer that isn't involved in more than one of these, and increasingly all four of them, because if the overriding trend here is that businesses are becoming more and more data driven, right? It's becoming a data and knowledge driven sort of business model, regardless of what you do. It's how you tap into all this data out there. Most of that data is in the cloud, right? As you start to enable a mobile workforce, mobile commerce, mobile support, mobile loyalty programs, all that stuff, which most of us use on our smartphones and our iPads and Android devices and all that kind of stuff. Even your TV, you know, the Samsung TVs now are all wired through this, right? The way you deliver the mobile applications is through the cloud. So it's really a cloud infrastructure in the background. And, of course, what are you doing when for what purpose is the data there? And what purpose are you engaging in the cloud? And what are you doing on your mobile device? And, you know, we know the number one use of the internet right now is social.
Mm-hmm.
And people are increasingly, you know, 70% or so of consumers now, for example, use their mobile device to one degree or another before they purchase something. And the resiliency and the dynamic delivery of value to them, you know, services, data, and so forth, comes from the cloud. And you're trying to affect the human element where you're getting people to share information and knowledge and build relationships and tap into each other, you know, connect, if you will. They invariably come together, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I see there's almost no question they come together. The question I would have is, aren't there technological hurdles that are going to stop us from having these connections? So, you know, for instance, you know, just at a base level, if we just talk about social media technologies, you know, Facebook doesn't talk the same language as Twitter. Twitter doesn't talk to Facebook. Google Plus doesn't talk to Instagram, and Flickr doesn't. And there's this API culture out there that allows certain technologies to talk to one another. We're looking at four very big things here, and that's analytics and social. Those two alone the idea of having those converge. And then you bundle that with the cloud, you bundle that with mobile. Now we're looking at, you know, having four distinctly different but related and connected technologies all converging. I think we may see I would agree that we may see one or two systems and platforms emerge that actually effectively tie them all together. But I still think there's so many technological hurdles for all of these things to really work together in a way that's usable for most businesses, given how fragmented all these things are across the web, particularly social. I mean, mobile, you've got, you know, Android, iPhone, and Windows, and, you know, non-smartphones. But, you know, what do you think about that in terms of the technological hurdles based on all this fragmentation and, you know, proprietary technologies?
Well, I think I'd make three observations and give you an example. So the first observation would be that if you go back to the 1990s, we had the same problem with client server. Right, and the PCs being on the front end or the back end, you know, systems of record, and it was complex, and everything was fragmented, and the open standards movement started to emerge, and before you know it, we had this thing called the internet and the World Wide Web, and that changed things forever, and that in a way standardized all those technologies so that they actually can come together and be viewed as one, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Or at least, you know, increasingly around one. And if you look at almost any industry through history, there's always been a trend over time to standardize around open standards, lower levels of value, and move to the next level. Whether you look at electricity, whether you look at medical kind of stuff, whether you look at like the automotive industry would be a good example of that. Over time, they standardize and they stop competing on that level. So I think open standards becomes absolutely critical for social, mobile, big data, and the cloud. And, you know, we've been a big proponent behind all four of those forces. The second thing I would say is that what the cloud can do is abstract out a lot of the proprietary and fragmented technologies that people are actually using, because the cloud gives you the ability to abstract it. And there's technologies out there like OSLC and web services based kind of standards that allow you, you know, linked web link lists and things of that nature that bring a lot of this stuff together in the cloud. So it actually becomes a consolidation or virtualization layer for taking out some of the heterogeneity out of the underlying technology. So it simplifies how people can use. And that's what many customers are doing today. You know, the third observation would be more around, you know, if you look at mobile as an example, it's okay for people to use different technologies to engage, you know, whether it's Android or it's iOS or whatever it may be. But increasingly, when they access data or they're accessing applications, you know, more and more as you go through time, they're becoming more common, right? Now, the people on the back end have to do a lot more work than perhaps necessary, and that's where the standards will start to affect that. But you can pull a lot of these technologies together, and you know, I think over time it's going to fuse together just like it did around the web, and that's why some people call this Web 2.0, right? Mm-hmm. If the internet and the web had given you access to information and connecting people, right, these four technologies combined take the internet and the web to a level of intelligence and personalization that we haven't had before, right? The ability to connect and share knowledge and do it in a much more dynamic, sort of intelligent way because of all the analytics.
So is this the dawn of what you would consider Web 3.0, that once we have SMAC, as it's referred to, hashtag SMAC, that we will have effectively what you would consider Web 3.0, where we have this convergence of social, mobile, analytics, and the cloud?
Yeah, and I think what we're seeing in the industry right now is a layer of standardization around the so-called web, right? And increasingly, there's new layers of standards that the industry is collaborating around that take into account social, mobile, analytics, and cloud. And as that gets standardized, you start to ease the ability to bring it all together. And it's the standards that are going to start to drive it all together. Because right now, there are a lot of people that are bringing them together in their businesses, but it's not as easy as perhaps it could be if we began to really standardize the ability to do that. And, you know, the example I was going to give was Boston's Children's Hospital, who created a sort of a collaborative, learning environment that spans over 1,500 doctors and I think some 300 hospitals around the world as a way to do peer reviews. You know, there's training videos, there's on-demand curriculum, demonstrations of different life-saving techniques that people can tap into very quickly. It's an awesome example of the power of social. But guess what? It's built on IBM Connections, which is the human social element. It's based in the cloud. It's accessible from all different types of mobile devices. And the power of it is the analytics that it's able to tap into to help doctors around the world share in some of the best practices. So it's not just within Boston's Children's Hospital, but they've opened it up for everybody.
Gotcha.
Right, and so in their case, they did bring all four of these together.
Gotcha. So really, it's about organizations that are able to see the promise of bringing these four together, and then seek for ways to tie those different things together in whatever way that they can.
Yeah, I mean, I would encourage people to step back and just say, you know, invariably, if I'm getting involved in leveraging any of these four. I think you need to start thinking about how do you create a holistic approach, a holistic strategy and design that takes all four of them into account, because invariably you're going to be driven there. Even if you just, another good example would be Miami Stadium. I forgot the formal name of it, but where the Miami Dolphins play.
Mm-hmm.
And they, they've implemented with IBM a major, program there where everything's mobile now, right? So you're walking around the stadium, it can tell you, up on the left is where you can buy, a pulled pork sandwich or something like that. And so they're using mobile that's tapping into the data, right? And guess what? You can socialize with other people and other fans, and you can, and all that stuff. So there's a social element that's getting kicked into it, and it's all delivered to the cloud. So another example of bringing us all together. But they think of themselves as a great mobile application. But if you really look at what it does, it's in the cloud, it's leveraging big data analytics, and it's inherently allowing people to socialize.
All right, so on that note, if anybody from the Philadelphia Eagles in the Lincoln Financial Field are listening, I would like you to take a little look at the Sun Life Stadium in Miami and maybe make it so, I don't know, at the very least my phone works in the stadium. So, Scott, I want to thank you so much for coming on again and talking to you about the six predictions. Freaking fascinating. You clearly have done a lot of research into this. You've got the case studies and experiences. I really hope people take heed and listen to these and really try to embrace these ideas and see if they can bring them to their own businesses and make it work. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, wants to be social with you, what would be the best way to either get in touch with you or learn more about what you're doing at IBM?
Well, my Twitter handle is SL Hebner. HEBNER. So that would be a great place. Or you can go to IBM.com/social business. And from there, you can get to my blog that's out there. And of course, my email, which is hebner@us.ibm.com.
Excellent.
And it'll be great to hear from people. Anything we can do to help out or anything you think we're missing here, it'll be great to hear from you all.
Excellent.
And Jeff, for you, I'm looking forward to doing your personality profile. We'll have to do that next.
Definitely. And and I'll see you later on this month at IBM Connect, where I'll be covering some of the things that are happening at this conference and some of the other brilliant people at IBM and from around the world of social business. So I'm really looking forward to that and getting to chat with you in person, maybe grab a drink together or something.
Perfect.
So thanks again for coming on. I think this was really fantastic. I'm going to put all those details in the show notes so that people can connect with you. And otherwise, I hope you have an awesome 2014. And everybody out there listening, thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, this was one of our epic journeys through social business. I hope you stuck around for the whole thing because it was definitely a doozy. Please drop by iTunes and give us a rating. We love to do this, and we love being able to get great people like Scott to come on and share some of their experience and expertise. Happy 2014 to everyone. Have a good rest of the day.